this has there are already in and specifically pay attention to welcoming our invitees, which will include the SASSA Internal Audit Committee and the Audit Committee, both of SASSA. Members will remember that we had wanted to invite them because internal audit committee are the people that work internally. They operate intra-departmentally, and all we can do is to play our oversight role. But I think it is very key that we sometimes meet and sit together. We do have an audit committee that is already present, but given the time, she is going to be introduced before she speaks. We're also doing this because we think our oversight role is going to be effective if we are all knowing which roles to play, who is where, but it is all about strengthening the oversight role. I think we are partners, and therefore we would like to thoroughly know each other, periodically meet, share our views, and also to find out from them when we think we don't get the right information or the correct information. But because we are going to meet for the first time, we were not actually, honorable members, specific to say what report they should bring, but to brief us about who they are, their role. But I do know in many sectors I've been involved that when the CFO gives a report, the audit is always next to them because they almost do or are supposed to be working together. That's the reason why we have them. Then after that, according to our program today, we are looking into the oversight, into the quarterly report, oversight over the quarterly report. I thought and I felt very strongly, honorable members, that this brief is going to be very helpful to our work going forward, especially when we oversight service delivery progress, but we must also be very clear that it can't be there not unless financial management is sound. That's the only way we can achieve what we want, because at the end of the day, it is all about availability and proper usage of whatever resources cost effectively to be able to do more with little. That's the introduction I'm putting forward to the program that is in front of us. The CFO will introduce the team so that I can specifically welcome the team and then allow them to play their role. But I want to emphasize, this is their home. They are very welcome. They should be free to be talking to us. So can I allow a new CFO to actually introduce them? Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairperson and members of the committee. I guess, Chair, you've given the CFO the floor, but I think before the CFO speaks, I would like us to deal with the issue of my absenteeism that the committee has been complaining. I think it will be only fair because I'm here this morning.
Sorry, Honorable Deputy Minister. Can I request that you don't do that because it is not provided for?
No, Chair. No. It is things like this that make some of us feel that we don't have to come here. Every week the committee has been meeting, and every time in your opening remarks you have commented in the portfolio committee about my absence.
Honorable, now I'm here,
you are not acknowledging me.
Honorable,
you are asking the CFO to speak before me. How is that?
Honorable Minister, I am not allowing you.
No, Chairperson, that is not going to happen. I cannot, one, I'm here, you are just not acknowledging me.
Definitely I didn't.
Exactly.
Definitely I didn't.
And every day when I am not here, the committee says I don't attend committee meetings.
Yes, when you are here, we say you have not come in here, when you are here. So can I tell you, Honorable Minister,
yes, Ms. Chairperson,
this
please.
Is not cabinet. This is a portfolio committee.
Mm-hmm.
You are not going to overrule me.
No, sir, but you are also going to respect me.
Stop speaking. You don't have to actually demand a respect.
No,
sir. I'm not allowing you, Honorable Minister.
At some stage we must find a resolution
and understand. There is an order. There are three hands. In that order, Honorable Mkhosi, Honorable after Honorable Mkhosi and Honorable Matopa.
No, Chairperson, I think we need to break and have a meeting on this issue because we are recorded, the South Africans are looking at us fighting, you know, between the Chairperson and the Minister. And we know as this committee, we did raise the issue about the DM. So I think it will be fair for us to we meet as MPs and him, not in front of the officials. Please. Because if the DM said, we are meaning that we won't have a meeting today. So we are worried.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I've taken a point. They will deal with it. Honorable Malchas, Honorable Staley, in that order.
Honorable Chairperson, I think when it comes to our meeting, if you make a point to say as the Chairperson, this is the order we will follow, let us follow that order. Because we know that Deputy is not in the meeting, but to say she's here. Because I said I'm happy to see you. And I think let us go on with the order. Because people can't come here and override rulings of the Chairperson myself. Thank you.
In that order, please.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. Greetings to our Deputy Minister. No, it is our humble plea that we have to respect the Chair. If the Chair is saying this is the way we're going to follow, I think it is fair to follow that. If the Deputy Minister is having a concern, I think she has got the right to have a concern. But at the same time, I think it must follow the correct procedure to speak to the Chair prior to the meeting if we have to discuss it here, and then we discuss it here. But at the moment, I think it is proper that we respect the Chair and we follow the procedure. We follow the agenda as the Chair is expecting us to follow.
This is the reason why I'm saying this matter is not being catered for, because it was already forwarded by the Whip to the political structures in this Parliament, and because members had actually decided that it be done that way. So there's no point when there's an agenda. Something can be brought in which is not in our agenda. So with all due respect, we are not going to discuss attendance of the Deputy Minister in this meeting. I have given the time to the CFO to be on the floor. and that is final.
Okay.
No.
I don't want to fight with you. Neither do I want to disrespect this committee. But the committee, yourself, Chairperson, have been raising my not being in the committee, in a portfolio committee, in public. It's been in the papers, it's been everywhere. You've not spoken to me. The one that's supposed to speak to me has not spoken to me. At no point has anyone even wanted to understand why I'm not here. But if I'm going to come to the portfolio committee chair, leaving a delegation, and you disregard, you don't even acknowledge my presence. Thank you very much.
There is an order. There is an order. There is an order. Don't say no.
Chairperson, I think in terms of the acknowledgement, you must take that. You are supposed to acknowledge the minister because she's the leader of the delegation. We bet only. That one, you must acknowledge that. But of us discussing the absence of the minister, I don't think the committee can do that.
But the committee has
you know. So don't that one
is the honorable.
Yes.
I'm happy you are leaving before I say leave.
No, let me leave. I think I'm not giving you a delegation. That is part of the reason why I'm not attending this meeting. Because when I come here, I don't have a statement. You have not acknowledged me as a chair. You are giving the clock off the floor before even acknowledging my presence.
It's only because I didn't know when you came. Because you have not come all the full year. So I didn't know when you have a delegation to leave.
Oh.
So can you please leave?
That's why I wanted that.
Can no, no, don't shout at us. Please leave, Honorable Deputy Minister. Please. Can we then get on to the business?
It's okay to keep
a hospital in there, not there. No, I'm sorry. I think you might have been disturbed to a certain extent, but I appeal to you to come down and to take there's water next to you and be in the state of addressing us. Thank you very much. We are used to such situations in this country.
Chairperson, before, thanks for your leadership.
Thank you very much, Chair, and just say good morning to the Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. We did receive a communication from SASA that we need to bring the internal audit to come and share and have an engagement with the committee. Just allow me, Chair, to say within the governance framework within SASA, you will have an internal audit, which is a branch that provides internal assurance. And you also have an audit committee, which is made of external people who are not employees of SASA. And those are the five members that are appointed by the minister and the CEO just to play an oversight role. They normally meet on a quarterly basis. They play an oversight in that regard. The official of SASA that will be presenting to the committee is an executive within SASA, is an executive in internal audit and risk management. So it is responsible for the internal audit assignment, but also the risk management within the organization. Her name is Ms. Thandisi Banyoni. So she will be taking the committee through in terms of what will be the objectives and their role within the organization and the relationship of internal audit with Auditor General, because not all work is done by the Auditor General. There are instances where the Auditor General relies on the assurance and the audit work done by the internal audit. And she will be able to take you through that process, but will be guided by the committee in terms of any additional information that may be required by the committee. The internal audit is not necessarily a committee. The committee that processes the findings of both the internal audit committee findings, or internal audit findings, and external audit findings. There's a structure that I chair, which is the internal the audit steering committee. So I chair the Audit Steering Committee. So the report of the AG is presented in that committee, and the internal audit reports are presented in this Audit Steering Committee, which I am the chairperson of that committee. So it looks at whether management is dealing with the audit findings, what commitments are made, what progress has been made. Such a report is always available. I could also share with the committee in the next meeting if the committee deems fit. That is primarily in terms of what were the audit findings of the 2016-17, what were commitments management has made, and what is the progress to date in terms of fulfilling those commitments. So if there was no policy, management would say, we'll create, establish a policy, and we can tell that whether the policy is implemented or not. So that's the governance arrangement within that. Without taking much time, let me allow Ms. Zwanyoni to present the report that we're going. We also want to apologize because of some of the glitches in the communication that we could not necessarily send the presentation on time to the committee. We do really want to apologize that the committee only managed to get the presentation this morning. It's not necessarily a norm. We know that documents need to be required and shared with the honorable members on time. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, I want to make you maybe to feel more comfortable and to be more informed. I apologize for what has taken place, and secondly, you are very welcome. And also the committee is happy now that there is this arrangement. And I think we were really in order to invite you, and we have understood why there were the issues when we were corresponding and communicating, because it's the first time we invite you, and it's the first time we know exactly who is supposed to play this role which we are looking for. Thank you very much. You are on the floor, Mama Simayo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members and honorable chair. As already introduced, my name is Tandi Sibanyoni, and I'm the head of internal audit and risk management at SASSA, and also responsible for fraud management. As the CFO has already indicated to honorable members, but we have a slight, I'm going to slightly change the presentation as I go along. Given the earlier discussion with the chairperson, because it seems as if the brief was not clear in terms of what needs to be presented. Because I understand now that the committee wants to know more the role of internal audit and how can we interface with this committee, and probably to what extent can we assist this committee in its oversight role. So I'm going to start with the background around internal audit at SASSA. We are established in terms of Section 51 of the Public Finance Management Act within SASSA. And we play a role in terms of providing oversight and advising management on a number of key areas, because internal audit is an independent activity within SASSA, and its primary purpose is to assist management in evaluating their controls to make sure that at the end of the day they are able to evaluate and put measures in place to close the gaps within their system, or that we address the weaknesses in a way that will help them actually achieve their objectives at the end of the day. And we do this by bringing, we follow a systemic sort of approach. We don't just audit at random, but right at the beginning of every financial year, there will be an audit coverage plan that's developed, which is informed by the risk register of SASSA. Remember, you cannot just audit anything. First, you have to do a risk assessment together with management to identify high-risk areas that might need internal audit attention. And then you develop a plan from that to say these are the high-risk areas that we should assist management in evaluating the controls for effectiveness and efficiency with a view to provide recommendations to management to address those weaknesses. So we focus on three areas. We focus on area of risk management. As I said, you assist management to identify risks, and then you also look at the controls that exist, whether they are adequate, they are effective, and they are efficient, and you also look at the governance processes. Does the organization SASSA have the governance processes in place to make sure that it's correctly managed and correctly directed towards achieving its set objectives at the end of the year? So the internal audit has primarily the following objectives. First of all, we look at compliance with policies and procedures and legislation, whether there's compliance, to what extent the organization does comply. But we go beyond that. We sometimes look at also the policy itself, because sometimes we find that we have policies that do not really facilitate service delivery. So as internal audit, we have a responsibility then to look at the policy itself, whether it does facilitate service delivery, and we might also recommend amendments to the policy to make sure that it addresses service delivery issues. We also look at the reliability and integrity of financial and operating information. As the reports come to Parliament, there's a role for internal audit to audit that information before it's submitted to audit. So we have a responsibility to look not only at financial statements, but also performance information, and I'll explain later how we do that. And we also look at the effectiveness and efficiency of operations. You might, sometimes we have processes and we have policies, very grand, but you find that they are serving the purpose, but they are very inefficient in the same process. So we also look at that, making sure that while we deliver a service, the services are delivered at the most cost-effective manner. We also look at processes and that have been implemented to safeguard the assets of SAFA. And we're not only talking about physical assets, but we're also talking about intangible assets like your software and things like that. We're also looking at the system, information system environment. So we do provide in IT audit services. Just to give you some brief overview of how internal audit is structured. Internal audit is centralized at the head office, but it's not a standalone. It forms part of the branch called internal audit and risk management, and fraud management is part of thereof. So it's centralized at head office, and this was deliberate because we try to keep it as independent as possible, because sometimes there's a risk that if you put internal audit within the regions, it becomes part of the operations, and then they lose their independence and objectivity. So it's centralized at head office, but it provides audit services to all the regions. And its work, as I said earlier on, is informed by the risk register, which culminates from a risk assessment that's conducted together with management to come to a decision that these are the high-risk areas that might need focus of internal audit in terms of evaluation. And as the AG, the CFO has said, we do work hand-in-hand with the Auditor General. And the decision from the previous financial year between us and the AG was that internal audit SASA will focus more on administrative processes, meaning we're auditing the small money. That's what we normally say as the small money, the administration budget. And the AG then focuses on auditing the big money, which is mostly grant administration. And why we took that decision, the challenge has been that when internal audit goes to audit, you find that at the same time, the AG is there to audit something else, or probably sometimes the same project. We want to audit foster child grant. The AG also audits foster child grant. Or we go as internal auditors to audit this week, and then the audit goes the following week. So there was a complaint that services are not happening, or we're interfering with service delivery because we're always there in the face of the people we're supposed to audit, so that they spend a lot of time actually dealing with our requests as auditors, both internal audit and the AGSESA. So we decided then that they will focus on that and we will focus on the administration budget-related aspects. And we have a staff complement of 26, and the 26 includes contract workers whose contracts are coming to an end very soon. And we report functionally to the audit committee. Once we have internal audited staff, on the other hand, we have the audit committee, which is provided for in terms of Section 77 of the Public Finance Management Act. Every department is required to have an audit committee as well as the audit committee. And internal audit, therefore, reports functionally to the audit committee, which means on a quarterly basis, we have to give a summary of all our findings to the audit committee, because the audit committee then is going to use that information at the end of the year to form an opinion of the system of internal control within SAFA. As you probably saw in the annual report that has been tabled
recently. Sorry very much. Sorry. Can I request that the door be closed, because I think it's the start of it. Many people are somehow disturbing. Thank you very much. It's not hot today. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. And we have a budget, an annual budget of about 22 million. I don't know why it's deleted there, but it's about 22 million, the budget is available. So, and that budget also caters for the work that is done in the regions by internal audit. And Maybe before I go to the findings, as I said, I'm going to amend the presentation slightly because I don't think the intent for today, according to the chairperson, was to get deeper into the details of the findings, but just to get a sense of how internal audit functions. As I said, we provide audit services. We do all types of audits now. We do performance audits, we do regulatory audits, we do financial audits, compliance audits, as well as IT audits as part of our work. And how then do we relate to the AG? As I said, we work hand in hand with the AG. However, it should be understood that internal audit is a component within SAFA. So it's not possible to achieve the same independence as that of the AG. Because remember, administratively, we still report to the CEO, and then only functionally to the audit committee, meaning our report goes to the audit committee. But the day-to-day running of the operations is the responsibility of the CEO as well. We account to the CFO. So it's to the CEO. So it's not possible then to have the complete independence that the AG actually enjoys. But we work hand in hand with them. That's why we agree then on the scope and the area of coverage, so that we avoid stifling service delivery by being always on the face of the people. However, in the previous years, internal audit has relied on some of the work that was done by internal auditors SAFA, because they felt like in most cases it's asset management, because every year we do an asset management exercise to verify the existence of the assets and also check whether the assets that are in the asset register are also do exist on the floor, and then also verify the assets from the floor back to the asset register. So the AG has been relying heavily on internal audit for that work over the years. And with management, we are independent of management. We only provide advice to management. We do audit reviews and then give recommendations to management. However, we also have a responsibility. As of last year, since the implementation of the court judgment, we decided to do probity audits as well. Probity audits mean you deploy somebody to work with management throughout the process to pick up anything that might lead to non-compliance or that might lead to inefficiencies and immediately advise management instead of waiting until at the end, because that's a disadvantage of internal audits like any other audit itself. Though it's internal, it's very reactive because you can only pick what has happened already. So we've introduced the concept of probity audit, where we proactively audit. As the supply chain process unfolds, you sit with the supply chain process, we sit with a bid evaluation committee, with a bid adjudication committee, and start picking up issues so that if it means there is a need to intercept the process, we can at that stage intercept the process to say, look, the process is not going according to plan and it might probably lead to litigation. So that's how then we relate to management. I'm not sure, Chairperson, whether you would like us to just share with you some of the projects that we've undertaken this year. And as I said, we focus mostly on high-risk areas. However, there are areas that we audit because they are mandatory. Like the audit of financial statements is mandatory. It has to happen. Before we submit to the AG, internal audit has to look at the financial statements.
Chair, I think we must let Ms. Sibanyoni continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Members. I'll just take you briefly through some of the projects. It's not going to take too long because I'm not going to share the detailed findings, but I'll just highlight those areas that we normally, which we found to be of concern to us, and some of the just key findings that we identified. So this is a list. As I said, some of these projects are mandatory. Some of the assignments are mandatory. Like the audit of performance information, it has to happen before submission to the AG. The audit of financial statements has to happen. The quarterly audit of financial information for reliability, accuracy, and completeness has to happen. So those happen on a quarterly basis. However, over and above that, we've undertaken these as well. The list management, because it was a concern, facilities management, particularly focusing on repairs and maintenance, software, asset management, antivirus management, contract management, particularly in the Eastern Cape. Then the middle column indicates the provinces where the audits were conducted. And grants SIU debtors, I'm sure the members are aware now that we have a huge debt book as a result of the debtors that were accumulated over the years with, as a result of the partnership with the SIU. And on a monthly basis, we have a project to continuously identify exceptions in our Oracle system and continuously verify any exceptions. Sometimes you find that there is on the system there's an invoice that was captured before the order was issued. So we pick that up as an exception using ACL, which is an audit command language software, to help us identify all those exceptions and verify whether they are accurate or is it just a typing error or is there something to worry about. And then we also did an audit of financial misconduct board, an audit of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Currently, we're busy with an assignment. As we are aware, we're almost approaching the audit. So we are doing an audit of interim financial statements. We're also doing an audit of subsistence and travel and accommodation. We're also doing an audit of social relief of distress. And why we pick these areas? It's because we were a bit concerned because some like leases that we have a lease for every office that we occupy in the organization. So we were concerned that there could be some level of inefficiencies from the manner in which we're managing these leases. Hence, we picked it up as internal audit to say, are there any? And we did some value for money audits on some of them with a view to recommend how management should better manage those leases to realize efficiencies. Just some of the high-level findings that I thought maybe would be of interest to the committee as well. The first one being the fact that we still do not have an electronic system to manage our leases. So it becomes a challenge every year for the AG when they pick a sample to say, give us these leases. We still have the challenge because we don't have a centralized electronic system to manage these leases, which is a problem. But we find that there was non-compliance as well with some circular that was issued by Public Works that requires us to negotiate the leases in line with the prevailing market rates. The tendency is that you have leases running for 5 years. When the lease expires, the tendency is to just extend that lease without going back to test the market and to say, we might still need the office, but it's always good to test the market, and then you can go to the same landlord and say, no, but the market rate in this area is this, in such a way that you are able then to adjust probably and lower the fee. And that's the area where we believe that we could probably make some savings because of the manner in which we, if we just change the manner in which we manage these leases. So it's just a few of them, and there was quite a lot about leases because we have a number of offices. The annual performance information, some of the issues that we picked up on slide 12, I'm just jumping because I don't want to take a lot of the time. I'm aware that social development must still present. Now, the issue of reporting, you know, as people, we commit as management to this target, but when we report, we go and report on something different, which is always a problem even for the AG, that there's no alignment between what we're reporting and what we planned as a target. So that was the key issue that actually also led to a qualification last year, because it was just about the manner in which we reported on this target which led to a qualification. So we're highlighting that. And as we move on, irregular expenditure, as I said, the biggest challenge with irregular expenditure is the fact that the finance function is decentralized. So procurement doesn't only happen at head office. It happens even at district level. Now, it becomes really difficult for the CFO sitting at head office to pick up the procurement that's happening at the district office. That's why in most cases he's just able to pick it up after effect, after the transaction has gone through, which is a bit of a challenge, though lately they've put some systems in place, some checks and balances to make sure that they're able to pick up quicker, probably even before payment is effected. But it is still a bit of a problem because of the decentralized centralized function to the district level even. ICT governance, we're not doing very, very well in terms of ICT governance. In terms of the policy on ICT, the white paper on ICT, there should be a governance structure that's set up. We have set up a governance structure within SASA to manage ICT projects and to track projects, ICT-related projects. However, there's a challenge because the structure is not really working well, and it's understandable to some extent because there's been too much happening around the payment itself, and so people have been absorbed, and the committee is structured at a very high level, at executive level, probably hence the reason it was struggling to meet. So we've made recommendations that maybe we need to relook at the composition so that it's not only overloaded with executives, but other people as well participate to make sure that there's always a quorum to sit in spite of the fact that most executives are not available. We also looked at the antivirus management within, you know, the antivirus software that is loaded onto our systems, and we picked up that some of the software is outdated, and that can render our systems very vulnerable to hacking and all sorts of other issues. So we've made recommendations about that. That was the key issue. And the software, the challenge is that we have so much software. We have different software used by different people at SASA to such an extent that there was some inefficiencies that we identified because there was software that was not utilized. Or there's licenses that we probably paying for at SASA, but the utilization thereof is very, very limited. So we believe that it's some of the work that should be done to audit all the software and identify those areas of inefficiencies and deal with them. So we wanted to say the committee must note this. But before I conclude, Chairperson, I just thought it's important for this component as well within SASA to share the risk register, especially since we're going, if we allow, Chairperson, mm-hmm. as we're moving towards April the 1st, which is everybody's headache, we thought we should share with you some of the risks that we identified that might probably affect the delivery of services. If the chairperson allows, I will just quickly run through it and then take you through some of the key ones. Okay. Yes. Thank you, ma'am. Tavale, can you please open the other one? In the meantime, in the interest of time, I'll just use the paper document whilst he's opening that document. We have speculated at the back of your presentation there is a document. Our biggest nightmare is that we might fail to pay social grants. That's our biggest risk. No? And we have a number of causes that we've identified. First of all, we foresee the possibility, okay, it's normal possibility actually, this one is becoming material, we will not be able to appoint a cash service provider by the end of March to enable the service provider to take over from CTS. So this risk has actually materialized now, it's no more a risk, it has become a reality. And our other risk is, yesterday I'm sure the committee is aware that we went to court, there were arguments in court about our application for an extension to allow for phase-in, phase-out of CPS for a further 6 months. And now we're still awaiting the court's decision. Our biggest challenge, our biggest nightmare is if the court says no to that extension, what then? Okay. Our challenge is, what if the court says no to our application? Which means then our contingency plan will have to kick out. But the last column there indicates the actions that either SASA is taking or should take to minimize the risk. We might not really completely deal with the risk, but at least we should be able to minimize the impact of that risk, should the risk materialize and become a reality. And we have a contingency plan in place. However, the details of the contingency plan are still being worked out. The contingency plan is going to apply to approximately 2.5 million beneficiaries who receive their money in cash. Religiously, every month they go to a cash pay point, which means those people do not have PINs. For the rest of the people, they use the national payment system. It's either they go to pay points or they swipe their cards to get their money. So that's not a challenge because money will be put in their accounts and then they should be able to transact. But the 2.5 million beneficiaries, they still have such accounts. We can put money in their accounts. However, we started now with a process to issue them with PINs. Then between SASSA and the post office, there is a plan that's put together to make sure that cash is transported to those people who do not have the infrastructure, the national payment system infrastructure, within the 5 kilometer radius, because those are the people that we're mostly worried about. And I think it's about 1.9 million people thus far. However, from the 1.9 million, we are aware that some have been using PayPoint, the national payment system, depending. You know, if the first comes on a Saturday, then they go to a PayPoint. But if it's during the week, they continuously go to the PayPoint. So we want to offload them and say and write and send communication to them to say, your money will be in your account, don't come to a PayPoint. So that will further reduce the numbers because we want to reduce the number of cash as far as possible and only really take cash to those few people. And the post office does have a cash in transit contract that we want to leverage on at SASSA because we have a partnership with the post office. So more or less we have a contingency in place, but you can never know, anything else might happen. So we are working towards that just to allay the fears of the committee. Our other biggest risk is the non-compliance with the Constitutional Court. Because if the Constitutional Court says no, CPS must go, and we haven't appointed a service provider and we are not ready to fully get support to take over, that could amount to actually non-compliance with its court judgment, and it might have serious repercussions for us. So it's one of the things that we want to bring to their attention. However, as I said, we do have a contingency because the Constitutional Court in March last year said there should be uninterrupted payment of social grants, and we're working towards that. How we pay is a different matter, but we want to make sure that everybody gets their grant. Hence, we have this contingency plan in place. And if I should take you to quote number five, we've made promises to the Constitutional Court that we're going to insource this and this and this function. There's a number of functions that we promised the court. We have started insourcing some of those functions. However, the test is going to be in the eating of the pudding itself. Come 1st of April, we have started negotiating with Labour to say to Labour, we're insourcing the enrollment function, which is currently provided for by CPS. From the 1st of April, it's going to be done by SASSA officials. We're still battling with Labour. They have agreed to some extent, but you know, with organized labour, anything is possible. They might come back and say, no, this is an additional function. We shouldn't be performed by these people, because that has been the argument. And we argued with labour that this is not an additional function. It's part of the enrollment. It happened previously. What's changed now is that we're going to do it electronically instead of putting people through that exercise where they use ink. Now we're going to take biometric fingerprint for them. So we have that issue as a risk that labour might not cooperate with us to make sure that this happens. The worst that can happen to everyone, including the honourable members as politicians, is that the reputation of the country could be at stake if we don't manage this transition properly, because it will be a question of government faith. That's the biggest risk that we're trying to manage. And how we're trying to manage it, we're saying we need to report where we're supposed to report. We need to keep all our stakeholders informed, including this committee. You need to be kept informed of what's happening. You shouldn't hear things from the media or from other people, but this committee should be kept, even if we don't come for a briefing, but there should be a one-pager that's sent to the committee to say, by the way, this is happening, et cetera, so that we are kept informed all the time. And we should keep our beneficiaries informed of what's happening to avoid panic, because once they panic, they can create chaos, and that's going to damage the reputation of government. So that's another risk that we're trying to manage. Obviously, we're working under tremendous pressure to make sure that we finalize the procurement process to appoint a service provider. And we're monitoring, much as the CFO and his team are closely monitoring this process, but we believe that there could be probably somewhere where we short-circuit the processes, and which might affect our audit outcome. So we're closely monitoring that. As I said, internal audit is also involved, providing the probity audit to make sure that nothing actually is goes amiss, goes the wrong way.
Winding, because I'm afraid there's still some clarities that are going to be asked. Can you allow that time? Because we also have another backlog in terms of the quarterly report. I hope members will understand my position in this one.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I was actually closing, and I just want to say the committee must note the work, and then probably then we look forward to engage. We can be of assistance to this committee, as the Chairperson has mentioned earlier on, that probably as the department presents its quarterly report, the audit findings as well from internal audit should probably be provided to the committee together with the quarterly report from SAFA. But thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
Thank you very much for your input. Can I put to the members, okay, there's a honorable in that line, the back line, in that order. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you for the internal audit report, presentation. Due to time constraints, Chairperson, I'm actually feeling suppressed because I've just browsed through the report and it is very negative from my point of view. There's so many questions that I would like to ask, but then that means we will have to keep the internal audit here for another day. So I will try my best. In an ideal world, your last statement, it would be good if we receive that one-page regular report, which we don't. From my point of view, I don't receive it when things happen. We read in a newspaper, we see social media, we see many, many things happening, and that is not good. And I'll just go to, I've got a lot of things, Chairperson, but I'll go to the high-level findings, the lease management. In a nutshell, that is a negative report. There's so many things that is not compliant. My simple question would be, is the staff competent enough to do the work? Because we sit here year after year, and we find that there's consequences, but my question is always, how is the consequences managed? What happened? Then there's this whole report is negative. I'm not going to go through it because it's all non-compliant. Then on page 15, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, disciplinary action against officials not instituted by the region. Why is there reasons why things should happen, but it just doesn't happen? Three cases of irregular expenditure amounting to 146,000. Were identified through the review, but just the whole report, non-compliance with circular number 26, monthly reconciliations of leases not performed. To sit here and say that IT, we in IT technology, things should already have been working, press a button and get what you need. Incorrect classification of expenditure relating to leases which could not resolve, payments made before commencement of date. You know, I wish it was a nice time and they fire you if you don't do what you need to do. But we can't do that, but there's the procedures that need to be followed. Payment and utilization of venues without signed lease agreement. How do these things happen, Chairperson? And then we sit and we hear there's an internal auditor and then there's an external auditor. And then at the end of the year, we hear all these things, but nothing happens. I want to give the other members an opportunity, Chairperson. But this whole report is negative. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think my colleague has covered me, especially on the high-level findings. What one would want to know, because the problem is in the managed regional leases. It's not at a national level. So my question is, do you have any mechanism to try and mitigate this challenge in the region? Because at the end of the day, we are one government. You can't say region. As a national department, you have to really come up with a mechanism to really deal with these challenges that you have outlined here. It's really scary, even on the non-compliance with circular number 26. Here, we don't know where is the problem. Is with the Department of Public Works when they... You know, or it's within the regions, or it's at a national level. Maybe if you can just clarify that one. Also, what I want to check in all the challenges that you have put forward or the risks, is there any mechanism that the department has come up with to try and mitigate those challenges that have been identified by the internal audit committee? And the other thing, Chair, is around the issue of no alignment on what is reported and the target that has been achieved. It's a problem that we always experience in the department, to say that when they report, they will say maybe we have achieved 10, only to find that it's 4. Also, you said your responsibility or one of your roles is to try and identify and make sure and see to it that the findings of the Auditor General are being dealt with, are being implemented. But in your recommendations, can you share with us, since you started working, whether the department is really dealing with the findings of the Auditor General? Because we don't want to see the repeat offenders, you know. All the financial years, when we look at it, you see this is a repeat offender, you know. And what are the consequences for those people that are really not doing what they are supposed to do? Maybe if we can get that particular report, because you, Auditor General, can't come up with findings every financial year and then nothing is being done. And we want to hear the consequences for those people that are responsible or are failing to adhere to the findings of the Auditor General going forward. Maybe I will agree with my colleague that, Chair, maybe you must afford us an opportunity to have the report from the internal auditor enough time, and then we interrogate, because we are moving to hear from the department, the presentation for the department is really not enough. I was also looking at its negatives, but also the way that you are indicating, yes, we did get a report for the risk around the issue of the payment and so on. We also think that we said last week we will request that next week we get clearly after the outcome of the court, but now there is no outcome of the court. We are still waiting. We must get a report to say what is it that is going to happen, and the challenges and the concerns that we raise as a portfolio committee to say what is going to happen. But there was no detailed plan to say this is the way that we are going to take if the court judgment comes negative. So we want to get that report, as we are correctly indicating that what is important is to feed the stakeholders with the information so that you get an advice and you act on it. Thanks, sir.
Please help the chair decide properly and implement properly. When you request time, you don't mean today.
No, not.
Thank you very much. And I would also want us to also recognize the fact that this is not the implementer. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's an audit person. So.
Yeah.
Some of these issues relate to the people that we are still going to ask, not today. Honorable Masango, it's your turn, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the internal audit for the report. I just want to agree with the colleagues about the fact that the report is not very nice to read, and especially if one looks at the fact that what we are given here are just high-level findings. One shudders to think what are the low-level findings here. By the time those findings are done, one would have dealt with the entire organization. And my question, I started jotting questions, but as colleagues have said, it won't work that way. But I just want to find out, Chair, because the internal audit has been with SASSA for as long as SASSA has been around, I believe. And when it goes to the last part of the presentation that pertains to the Constitutional Court and things like that, I mean, surely they may not have presented a report to us, but internally the work was done when this thing started about not complying to the Constitutional Court orders. And what happened in the previous sort of 2017 to 2018 thing to ensure that there is compliance that is taking place? Because now we're sitting in 2018 and we have a report like this, and there has been experience of this having happened. And also I missed the sort of status of the audit committee. I mean, what can they do? What can they make sure happens? That I think they consult, they are just helping and advising and whatever ring. And I am saying we have a audit committee, and this is where we are sitting, with a situation where we're working around contingency plans on the 7th of March. We haven't finalized them, and this has happened literally to the day last year. So I'm just, and again, one would need some time with that. But I would just like to find out from the audit internal audit, why are we finding ourselves here if similar, I believe, similar reports have come out after last year's sort of non-compliance of note, and now even the judges don't know what to say anymore, and we have internal audit doing the work that they are doing, which looks great because the coverage is so wide. And so we would learn as an organization where things are falling apart. If you have your leases which talk to accommodation, okay, and you have ICT in being a problem, and then you have like huge things. You have huge things that make SASA happen, and they're all part of such a damning report by internal audit. We have a problem, Chair. Thank you.
No, Chairperson, thank you. I think, Chair, one needs to register that maybe as this committee, in terms of our oversight, we need to call the internal audit to come and present to us, because now we are on the fourth. Next time, like, our term is ending, and if we have called them earlier, even us, we could manage to do our oversight earlier and to check the risk that the department is doing. But nevertheless, Chair, you see, when we talk about the audit committee, especially the internal audit committee, it goes back, I also wish one of the ministers or the deputy ministers were here, Chair, because it goes back to them, and including the DG. So the high level, I will say the high level, because it's where the nitty-gritties of the organization or the department goes to. Chair, when we talk about the audit, I'm happy that the presenter did emphasize the issue of risk management, identifying the risk and controlling it. The third part, in terms of the whole presentation, the department has identified the risk for 4 years, but they didn't control the risk. And in any risk management or in any audit, you do have, I don't know which color do the department use. Others, in terms of the integrated report, it will be green, blue, and red. And red will tell you that you are not well. So maybe next time, Chair, let them bring that. We want those colors so to check in the chart with the department, but it seems all of it is red. Let's come on the issue of risk management. You know, when we talk about risk management, we talk about millions that you are losing daily in all departments, in all organizations. When we talk about issues of risk, we talk about issues of escalation fees that are happening every year, not every 5 years, because we have a 5-year contract with Pulani, maybe they're having a property on me, every year there's an escalation fee. And if the department don't see this, Chair, somebody can say the escalation fee maybe goes to 20%, and that was supposed to go for 3% in a year. There are no memorandum of understanding between the SARS, I mean the department. They say there's no memorandum of understanding on the issues of mismanagement. I'm having a problem, so there are no contracts. But the audit committee is there, Chair. What is the work of the audit committee? The issue of the APP. We go there and debate as members. We are here sitting. Chair, they're making noise beside that subject. I'm on the floor. The issue of the APP. The department go and print the document. That is very expensive with an experience layout. That will go out to the public. But when you come to the issue of risk, they will tell you about the indicators that are not aligned. So what's that? It's a wrong information again. So which means they're not open to us and including the South African outside there. I come to where Dr. Magapo was talking about the AG. Let the department chairperson come with a report for 4 years since I came in 2014 to date in terms of the management letter point from the AG. From 2014, 15, 16, 17, we wanted to know what the AG has raised with them. And in all those letter points, which one did you meet, which one you didn't, because it will assist us. In closing, Chair, on the issue of SASA, it's a problem, especially on the payment on the first. If the court can say, no, I want it to be open, department, you're not going to do it. You're not going to do it. The issue of giving people pins, chairperson, there will be a lot of fraud that is happening on the issue of that issue only. And on the issue of payment, when they talk about the radar saying 5 kilometers or what, I mean, so where to? At Ipelegeng, people are going there to socialize on their day of getting their grants. So don't make our houses to be burnt. They know that you are sitting in this committee. They know that you are advocating for them. But on the first chair, if the money is not there, it's going to be a problem. On my closing, on the issue of the workers, I was a shop steward of Nihau. You are dealing with Nihau there. That's a union that is understanding its mandate. They are right. They are right. Chair, when the things go wrong with the department, they will take it to the employee. When it fails, workers will be charged for the things that they don't know. You cannot just train a person now, then you say you're doing this. You are changing the condition of his or her employment. Let's check first the condition of employment. This is a highly risk that the department was supposed to check. You cannot say today, Bulan, you're going to do a biometrics, whereas I was just an administrator. Because now there's a crisis of SASA, everybody must run. Indeed, the country is going to burn on the first if SASA is not doing what they're supposed to do. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I will always remind the members that we are given this report. The very implementers are not here. And then we will deal with that. Yes, I understand. Honorable, you said if you have your hand up, because I'm about to allow the chairperson to ningathunukali, so they don't come because so on. May Manha?
I'll be very brief, because my problem was I wrote it down somewhere. Yes. We do not have our executive here to account, because we listen to internal audits, and internal auditors, special sectors within the department, but I don't have my PFM here, and only the HODs here, because my worry is quite a number of questions were asked, and it was in my mind too. You know, my concern is, what is the status the department is giving you? Because whatever you do, if there's non-compliance, then it has to be, you know, that to implement, or due processes have to follow if whatever you are saying is not implemented. I'm not going to linger on the success story, because first can see there's a lot of things around it, and everyone should sit up. So my concern is, when you give the information to the department, what actually happens to it? And it's only the acting HOD here, but our executive authority is not here. Thank you. I'm not going to speak further.
I thank the members for their input, and I also would want to agree with the Honorable Nkosi to say we are doing this exercise when the executive authority that was here has already left, and we are at a risk, if we look in our own risk, of backing from a wrong tree. That is, we're going to ask the here when we did not invite this leadership to get this briefing. But all the inputs, if I were to ask a question, they were very, very, very much, I don't have anything to add in their responses. But I do want to come back to Honorable Mahlopa that this information is being handed to us so that we can act on it. And secondly, it's not information that we have actually looked for, researched. It's the work that that team is being paid, has been budgeted for to do that work. So there is no way we can be able to be seen as a witch hunting or whatever. I am also extremely surprised by the Eastern Cape region information. And I think the thinking that honorable members had of calling in the provinces to answer for themselves, instead of actually, yes, the good work is, due diligence has been done, and findings have been recorded, documented, they are in front of us. I think we will have to also ask, because Mamumakas is correct to say, we will have to understand your status given to you as appointees there, because we also are not going to keep quiet on the issue of Gauteng a missing whistleblower, nor are we going to keep quiet on the issue of Northwest, where a human resource person refused to do a wrong thing and is now on suspension. Because this issue, you've assisted us, the issue of saying, when there's one government as a government, and not, and then fears, when something happens at a particular level, we find it difficult to intervene. Won't make sense, because at the end of the day, every other province gets budget from this process where we have to be able to account to South Africans on our efforts to ensure that wrong things are not being done. But I think I'll give you now time for your responses, but I wanted to make a note of this to say, indeed,
our members are correct.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members, for the questions. I'll try to attempt without sounding like management, though I'm part of management, however. With regards to the comment about information sharing is noted, Honourable Member, and I will try my best to make sure that the Office of the CFO at least provides information. With regards to list management, this is a very tricky one because in some instances you have the Public Works Department involved. Now they extend the leases. But we put this as a finding because SASSA pays anyway. So, and we put this to prompt management as well to engage the Department of Public Works to say your actions are costing us a lot of money. So it becomes the responsible manager then to talk to Public Works to make sure that the Public Works actually does the right thing in terms of negotiating. But I know as SASSA, after this audit, there was an audit, or it's still happening, I think Corporate Services undertook an audit of all the leases to try and identify where do we have leases, what's the status of those leases, where they're expiring, and whether is there anything else that can be done. And I know the Northern Cape started negotiating some of the leases, and they've realized a serious savings on some of the leases that they've negotiated. So some work is being done towards cleaning up this exercise. It's a pity that I provided the findings from internal audits. I think because of time constraints, there was no time actually to look at all the action plans, because after every audit, management is given a responsibility to go and put an action plan together. Just like they put an action plan for the OEG report, they also put an action plan for internal audit reports to work towards correcting some of this. Probably with our next engagement, then we will be reflecting that what progress has been made. As I'm saying, I'm aware of an audit of leases that's happening now. I'm not sure whether it will be looking at the competencies of the people. This I can bring to the attention of the executive responsible for corporate services as well, just to look into that. And the issue of disciplinary. There's a debate now that's going on about irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, primarily on fruitless expenditure, because that's where, in most cases, you sometimes have to take disciplinary action. We've been challenged recently by the High Court, by the High Court in Pietermaritzburg, so that our actions of making people pay are actually not in line with legislation. Because there's a belief that if you say to a person you've committed fruitless expenditure, you must pay. You cannot take further disciplinary action because that amounts to double jeopardy. And on the other hand, they are saying there's a court judgment that challenges Section 38 of the PFMA that found that section to be inconsistent with the Constitution. Because Section 38 says if there's an overpayment or if you've committed irregular expenditure or fruitless expenditure, we must recover from you. And they say that that's unconstitutional. So our legal services is still looking into the judgment and see to what extent can we, probably especially the High Court judgment, to what extent can we probably amend the policy to be in line with the concerns that were raised by the court. So we're still sitting with a dilemma. And the risk register, and I agree, Dr. Mandlopa, that there should be a plan that comes, that's presented. Either way, there is a phase-in, phase-out project together with a contingency plan that says if the court says yes, CPS, you can do phase in, phase out. We allow you 6 months. This is the way we go. This is how we're doing it. If the court says no, then the other contingency plan kicks in. So there are those two plans. So probably when SASSA comes to present, they can be requested to present both plans, the detailed plans that they've developed now together with SAPO. I think I need to clarify the issue of the APP. Remember, I said if some of the work, some of the audit assignments are mandatory, like an audit of performance information and an audit of the 12-month performance information. That audit is done before printing is done. So the annual report, before it goes for printing, it's sent to internal audit, somebody internal audit, audits the printer's proof, what we normally call the printer's proof, the final version before printing. So chances of incorrect information being printed are seriously reduced, unless really if the auditors also miss something, but it's unlikely that the printing can happen with all these findings. Normally it's audit and then the printing happens after auditing. I just wanted to clarify this. Let the honorable members think SASSA has been printing wrong information for them. Chairperson, I know we're running out of time, but I just want to take a few minutes before I allow the CFO to speak on behalf of management. The issue of the unions, ma'am, we really probably need honorable member. I think we need probably an offline discussion around the issue of labor vis-a-vis the process that we're following at SASSA now. Because, unfortunately, with all due respect, I disagree with the views of the honorable member, but so probably something that we can take offline and not really take a lot of time. Honorable Chair, if you allow me, I want to allow the CEO, I want to ask if the CFO can also say something on behalf of management, since he's here, and some of the work probably that we presented affect his area of work as well, if you allow.
Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Indeed, what we wanted was to, this briefing I think is enough, because we have some other work to do, and we still are looking forward to inviting them, because they have to come in as soon as possible insofar as the case today. And then I won't want us to really ask the questions, because he is here because you are here, Chair, but still he is still have to come. But I do want also to say, in terms of what you have informed us, we somehow have a lot of disagreements in terms of this report being proofread, read, etc. Because I can tell you, if we can show you our annual reports and other documents, there is even spelling that has to be done by the honorable members. Our documents are really, really not up to standard. So I think, honorable members, if I may plead with you, because the same reports were given, including this final, this last big risk. It was presented and such a plan was presented, but as I looked in the TV with my eyes glued there, I also was surprised to learn that they are telling the court that they don't have a contingency plan. My eyes were glued, but I could pick that up and with great panic, because some of these matters are a violation. Because you can't come, this is extension of parliament. And if you have said anything to us, be sure that it's not tangible. You cannot come and give a full report in a portfolio committee extension of parliament, and then when you are somewhere, you say something that members did not, not unless I saw something wrong. Let me allow, maybe they were not saying they don't have. But at the same time, on the issue of the minister, like all ministers, the minister is in the cabinet committee meeting, which is very critical for this issue we're discussing. That's why she's not here. But I think because it's a new minister, she has to receive reports. This report, so that we are in a position to ask the minister in future. But also, I accepted the constructive criticisms on the part that says we could have done this exercise long before now, and I fully accept that one. And therefore, I don't feel I am refusing you a chance to do your job, because you always do your job. But what is left now is to say, oh, there was a hand on Honorable Van der Merwe, and your input is driving us towards closing this part and coming to the next part. Thank you very much.
No, Chairperson, I just wanted to briefly support what you had said. I also watched the proceedings, and I think the Chief Justice was very annoyed with the state of affairs currently, and I think I understood exactly how you understood when the presentations were made in terms of a contingency plan. So I also want to say again, which is an issue which I have raised in this Portfolio Committee on numerous occasions, if we get presentations that gives us a certain indication or certain information or a certain progress report, it cannot just be that we find on other platforms that it's changed, because it amounts to misleading Parliament. And we have to walk this journey together in terms of getting to 1 April and past 1 April, but we also can't have a situation where we engage on issues just to find that on another platform or in another committee or even in front of a constitutional court, the highest body in the land, highest court in the land, things change. And I think we have to repeat the sentiments that, you know, we cannot just be disrespected with the wrong information all the time, because it also doesn't allow us to do our oversight. And like the previous colleagues have said, you know, if 1 April doesn't happen and the court says no, yes, the country will burn, and I'm sure we won't get to that point. But the point is, we cannot be treated as if we are just lame ducks sitting here and we are not involved in the process, and that we are always being treated like stepchildren with the wrong information. I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's respectful. And I just want to say again, it also amounts to misleading Parliament, which is an offence. And I think we must just record our disappointment again.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think, Chair, maybe as you are concluding, maybe if we can get an understanding that next time when we call the Internal Audit Committee and the relevant stakeholders, we also call the region so that they answer for themselves. Because this thing of keeping on pointing this side and the other pointing this side is not going to help us. We need them in the one basket and we deliberate, all of us, all those relevant people on the high risk.
We will shoot in the dark, because what we will do is to invite them all and make an arrangement that we have a full day. And listen, whether they are on the wrong or on the right, we will then be saying, brief us as written, and we make it one of our high-level oversight arrangements.
No, Chair, I thought maybe you're saying, I wanted maybe to say something before the DG speak on, or can I say it now once? Okay. Chair, my point is, you already touched the issue, but you are in passing in terms of talking about it. I think as this committee, Chair, the National Department of Social Development must assist us on the case of Nomakunen, one of your employees in Gauteng. that is missing from the 26th of February 2018, yes. And Norma Kunene was a whistleblower chair in terms of the 5 million issue on the issues of the NGOs. There was that, last time I think we did touch this issue of NGOs. Within the media, people want the justice for Norma Kunene. And I think as this committee, as members of parliament, for us to win the oversight, we can't fold our arms. The young women is missing since from the 26th. And maybe the department must give us the whole information, not about the missing. It even goes back to that case, what is happening. Because last time we did touch it, but we didn't go in detail on the issues of the NGOs. So you see, this thing is a serious issue. If the person now is missing, we must cut this thing earlier because maybe it's a chain. So let the department give us the information. We know that if in the future the inquiry needs to sit on these issues of the NGOs, I think we need to do that. Let us not allow what has happened in life SDVN in terms of the funds of the government. But you were talking about the young person that is missing, so, and it's a woman. So the department needs maybe next week to assist us. Thank you, Chair.
If members agree, I would then say, let us issue a statement today as a fully fledged portfolio committee on our concerns, and also making that call that the department will come and brief us, having actually indicted with their region on this matter, and also that the department must be prepared, and the honorable members as well, that we might have to afford ourselves a 2-hour, 3-hour meeting when we want to have that space to deal with issues and not wait for the portfolio committee day. But if there are pressing issues, it also relates to a matter where we can be able to ask permission to visit a particular area that we fly in and fly out in order to get, because we can't be seen not doing anything about our own employees who get victimized, because that includes their work. Whether we don't know what might have happened, but all we know, a missing person is also a responsibility of our own as the social development. It's worse when it's our own member or matters relating to us. I don't know whether DJ was going to say anything. I don't want to close anyone out. Acting DJ.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, in terms of also our own oversight, we are engaging with SASA. We do have some information based on what she has presented. One of the critical issues that we were worried about was that they need to strengthen their risk management unit. But I know that recently they were busy with the recruitment process. I think someone has been employed, because that was our worry, that if the organization is big, then that unit needs to be strengthened. Regarding Norma Kunene, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, now that we are coming back next week, we will provide the portfolio committee with the report. We'll follow up on the matter. That's the commitment that we can make for now. Thank you.
Then can we allow the chair? Yes, we can allow the chair to leave, so that because we have closed that chapter, we are engaging now with the committee quarterly report. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Long as you should be prepared. Be prepared. Have a full prepared. Like it's